Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for listening to the Eastern Airlines Radio Show, where we come to you each week on Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Of course, our hosts are Steve Thompson, Margaret Bars, Dan Bookskye, Chuck Albright, Bill Joseph, Howard Gucci, and my name is Neil Holland, substituting for Jim Hart, who is our normal opening host. Last week's show covered our own dramatization of the event that is still on an ongoing investigation today, the hijacking of Northwest Flight 305 by a man still known only as D.B. Cooper, or Dan Cooper. Our troupe, now known as the Eastern Playhouse Performers, delivered their interpretation of many known facts surrounding that airborne drama some 40-plus years ago. If you would like to recall what happened during and after that mystery in the skies, you can go to our website, www.blogtalkradio.com/Captain Eddie, that's CAPTEDDIE, and click on episode 111. This week's show is an open mic discussion of whatever's on your mind. We have had several emails that we'll try to turn over to our host for their take on the subject. Speaking of our hosts, we have with us tonight Margaret Bars and yours truly, Neil Holland, here in Jacksonville, Florida. Hi, Margaret.
Hi, Neil. How are you tonight? Well, I am assuming you're well. All right, let's go ahead. Just wanted to mention that here in Jacksonville, we've had a great day, but wait a moment. I do believe we have some breaking news. Neil?
Yes, breaking news. Folks, I'm sure you all have heard about the tragedy in Boston today, and a tragic event that happened during, I think, after right shortly after the Boston Marathon was run. And I believe there's some loss of lives, and many, many people were injured during that event. Margaret, have you got the latest on that?
Well, I do have something from FAA. The Federal Aviation Administration is warning pilots they have created a no-fly zone over the site of the two explosions. And they did this about an hour after those explosions occurred. And the no-fly zone is with a 3.5-mile radius. And I believe the zone is limited to flights under 3,000 feet in altitude. So I think most airliners would fly except when taking off or landing.
George Jen, you're with us tonight, and you're up from the New England area. You're very close to Boston. What's going on? Have you heard any new reports about that?
No, I have not, other than what's been on news, which I'm sure that everyone has heard about it. It's a lot of speculation at this point in time, but I don't think that there are anybody really knows what happened.
Yeah, it's something that it really shocks the nation. It shocks all of us that things like this are happening now in this country, and we all have to be concerned and very much aware of where we are and what we do and who we are with, and we've got to do a little bit more thinking now about the protection of ourselves and our families. But Margaret, how are things in Jacksonville, Florida? I'm here, sitting here. I can look out the window and tell what they are, but you tell me. I love to hear your voice.
Well, Neil, it's been a beautiful day here in Jacksonville. We've had temperatures in the mid-70s to low 80s. Finally, though, the tree and pollen count has been downgraded to moderate. And for those of us that suffer with these allergies, that is a welcome relief.
Okay. Steve Thompson, North Carolina, give us a report there.
Hi, everybody. Well, we've got an RVR that's less than 500 here on top of the mountain with a temperature of 47 degrees. So no golfing today. Nobody even got on put on their rain slick to go golfing, which they would have needed. But speaking of golfing, for those of you who are golf fans, and I think everybody listening is, did you see the end of the Masters yesterday? If you could not have written a script for the ending of a golf match, that would have been any better than that one.
I didn't see it.
I didn't.
I've seen it over and over again.
Well, I'm sure I can probably see it on the rerun on the internet.
It was terrific.
So what happened?
They really had a good shootout.
Can you give us a real short synopsis of what happened?
Well, let's see. Let him go ahead. He's
go ahead, Chuck.
Yeah, go ahead, Steve.
At the end of the on the 18th hole, 72nd hole, there was it was tied between Angel from Argentina and Scott, whose last name I don't remember.
Adams.
From Scott Adams from Australia. And they were both tied, and they ended up with birdie putts on the last hole. And the first one was Scott Adams, and he was followed by Angel
Cabrera.
Cabrera, yeah. And so they had a playoff, and they tied on the first playoff hole. And on the second playoff hole, there was a birdie by Scott. And now, what is wrong
Adams?
With me?
Adams?
Adams, yes. And it was just a beautiful finish.
Oh, great. That's great. Well, speaking of golf, Chuck Albright in the Villages, where I think there are about 50-some golf courses close
yes,
by.
Yes, it sure is. We're finishing up one of our three communities probably in the next couple of years, and it's going to push us over 70 golf courses. Today was really nice. We had a little rain, and then it kind of moved on out over to the Jacksonville area, I guess, and then down south somewhere. We've been pushing about 88 degrees here, and it's going to go down to supposed to go down to about 66 tonight with very little rain, maybe 10% that we're looking at. But we've had a great day today. I played golf yesterday out on one of our 18-hole golf courses, and really had a great time with some of my golfing buddies here. We're in the middle of getting ready for our festivities that's coming up and on this weekend. We got a little parade that we do with our golf course, golf clubs, and on the back of our carts and everything with the little stuffed animals and everything. And it's nice. Everybody gets a good laugh out of it. But all
very
in
good.
All, we've had a great time here at the Villages.
Okay, very good. Bill Joseph and Jan Butchkai have taken a few weeks off, and they'll be returning in the very near future. My name again is Neil Holland, and I'm coming to you right here in Ponte Vedra, where Margaret and I are in our studios here. Good weather, and I had the fortune of this past week, at least 2 days, I wish it were longer, of going to the 66th annual Sun and Fun in Lakeland, Florida. And what a show. Good, great weather and great performances by the pilots. Although I didn't see much of that. I was on the front porch with my friends at the QB hangar there on the flight line, almost on the flight line. And that's the beautiful thing about being a QB is the wonderful hangar they have there, right there at Sun and Fun, and members only. So we had a good time and talked to some very interesting people, met folks from different airlines. And as a matter of fact, they had a board of all the major carriers that people stop by and put their name. And usually most of them put their phone numbers because a lot of folks like to talk to some of their colleagues that they haven't seen in many years. So that's the purpose of that. But Eastern was well represented. I think we had about 20 people on the board there and probably a lot more there than those that just signed up. But if you've never been to a Sun and Fun event, it's always usually held in April. First week of April, and I've been to many in the last 30 years. I used to have an exhibit at one time when I first started to head down that way when I was living in Atlanta. And but they have an FAA facility there, and I learned that you can, if those folks out there that have any kind of FAA certificate, you can, and especially if it's a paper certificate, you can convert that into a plastic card. And just simply go by going to www.faa.gov, G-O-V, and registering your name, putting your certificate number in there, and they will issue you a plastic, which is a new type of license, or not license, but certificate that is issued by the FAA. My first certificate that was issued to me was a CAA, Civil Aeronautics Authority, that issued back in 1954, which was my mechanics license or certificate. I keep saying license because so many people call the pilot license mechanic license and refer to it as a license, which actually it is not a license. It is a certificate. Someone asked me one time and won a bet that I couldn't answer the difference between a certificate and a license. Do any of you folks know the difference between a certificate and a license? George?
Steve? No, I'm afraid I don't.
Chuck? Mark, of course, does not.
I think you have to work for a certificate. You can get a license at the driver's ed place.
A certificate never expires. A license does.
Ah, very good.
There, and our certificate never expires. Your mechanic certificate, your pilot certificate, whatever certificate is issued doesn't expire. It only requires experience or either what we would call in other professions continuing education or updating your proficiency, and also the fact if you're in the air, an FAA certificate or physical that is required in order to fly an airplane. However, your certificate is always there, and unless it's revoked for some reason by the FAA. So it was very interesting to go in and talk to the FAA folks there. So many different companies were represented at Sun and Fun. They don't have. It's not a commercial carrier type of air show. It's more general aviation and light sport aircraft. They call it LSA. Is really front and center now at the show. And I guess that's because folks that get old, like some of our retired pilots are approaching ages that we can't get physicals. But you don't need an FAA physical as long as you have a driver's license to fly a sports aircraft, a light sport aircraft, which is 1,200 pounds or less. So they're really gaining in popularity. So any comments about Sun and Fun? Anybody want to know any more about it? That's about all I can tell you about it. I did do some interviews. I was going to run one tonight, that I interviewed an American Airlines captain, and a very interesting interview. However, I listened to it before I came on the show, or actually setting up the show so I could plug it in, and there was so much noise by those QBs sitting on the porch where I was doing the interview, and then aircraft noise in the background. I decided, well, it would be too annoying to folks to try to pick out the words that were said in the interview, so I didn't do that. Before we get started, let's see. We didn't ask George, how is the weather up in New York?
Well, right now it's very nice. As you probably have read, we are having a very, very cold winter and spring, and it still has not got to the point where it normally is as far as the heat goes, but today wasn't too bad, probably in the mid to high 50s. That's been about it so far this year.
Sounds good. We do have a caller from area code 859. Caller, would you like to make a comment?
Yeah, Neil, Jim Graybill here.
Hey, Jim, good to hear your voice. Great to have you with us tonight. How are things in Kentucky?
It's warming up very, very nice. Trees are starting to bud out, and it's nice here. I think it's in the mid-70s here today.
Oh, great. That's Louisville, right?
No. Here we go.
Hey, Jim, this is Margaret. You know, I'm a big University of Kentucky fan since I'm from the Lexington area. It's okay. We forgive you for the University of Louisville winning this year.
Well, at least we kept it in Kentucky this year.
You know, that's our only solace, Jim.
I have a little basketball trivia for you. This is George. I grew up and was friends with Rick Pitino's brother, Ronnie, and I remember Rick when we used to be playing basketball in the driveway, and he would come out and pester us and run around so we couldn't play the game. That's how far back I remember him.
Are you all about the same age?
No, Rick is younger. He, his brother, Ronnie, I don't know if his brother is still alive or not, but he was my age, but Rick was probably 5 or 6 years younger. And that was, of course, we all grew up in Queens in New York. And, you know, I remember Rick to this day. His brother used to chase him away all the time.
That's a great story.
Well, I'm telling my age here, but when I started at school at UK, Adolph Rupp was the coach.
Adolph
Rupp. Yeah, I hear all that laughter.
Rupp Arena.
I read about him.
Good answer, Steve. Good answer.
Before we start some email, answering some of our email that listeners have emailed us, let's take a little commercial break. As a matter of fact, I'm going to scrub that commercial break, and I'm going to play something a little different tonight. See if you like this.
Oh, life could be a dream if I could take you up in paradise up above. If you would tell me I'm the only one that you love. Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Hello, hello again. Shaboom, and hoping we'll meet again. Oh, life could be a dream if only all my precious plans would come true. If you would let me spend my whole life loving you. Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Now every time I look at you, something is on my mind. If you do what I want you to, baby, we'd be so fine. Oh, life could be a dream if I could take you up in paradise up above. If you would tell me I'm the only one that you love. Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Shaboom, shaboom, ya la 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 la, shaboom, shaboom, ya la 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 la, shaboom, shaboom, ya la 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 la, shaboom, shaboom, ya la 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 la, shaboom, shaboom, ya la 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 la,
shaboom, shaboom. Ya la 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 la, shaboom, shaboom. Ya la 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 la, shaboom. Every time I look at you, something is on my mind. If you do what I want you to, baby, we'd be so far. Life could be a dream if I could take you up in paradise up above. If you would tell me I'm the only one that you love.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart.
Hello, hello again. Shaboom, and hope we'll meet again. Boom, shaboom.
Hey, la dee ding dong, la lang, la lang, la lang.
Shaboom,
ba do, ba do, ba do, ba be. Life could be a dream.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Life could be a dream. If only all my precious plans would come true. If you would let me spend my whole life under you.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart.
Well, that's our musical entertainment for tonight. Anyone want to guess the year?
Well, not only guess the year, but guess the musical group that's singing that song.
All right.
And I can do neither.
Good answer.
Let's see. I only take a guess. I can't name the group, but how about 51, 1951?
54. Close enough.
54.
Okay. You win the prize, Jim.
Okay.
Now, the second part of that answer has to be before he gets the prize. Oh, he said he couldn't answer it. He couldn't identify the group.
No,
and anybody.
I want to say the Platters, but, you know, I forgot when I did the recording of that to put it on the air, and I forgot to look. So that'll be next week. We'll let you know who the group is that sang that song. But, of course, all of you remember that song, right?
Yes, we're all about
yes,
it.
Yes, 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 yes.
Okay, okay. Margaret, I think you've got our first email today.
I do, and actually it comes from David in Atlanta, and he says, I heard that starting next summer, anyone wanting to become a commercial pilot will need 1,500 hours of flight training before they can be hired. Won't that add to the pilot shortage already being predicted? Well, David, I'd like to just make a couple of quotes to you from some individuals who did comment on this, especially Roger Cohen, who's head of the Regional Airline Association. And he said, you know, people have already invested incredible amounts of time and money in their aviation education, and now they've just been told you have to go back out and fly around in circles at your own expense just to get some hourly experience. And he goes on to say that people now in training programs cannot get enough hours in before the deadline. So, in fact, the pipeline for new pilots will be smaller. And just another quick comment from Kit Darby, who is an aviation industry consultant. And he talks about the retirement of thousands of pilots is closing in on the mandatory retirement age of 65. And then also military pilots who used to flock to the nation's airlines are staying in the military longer. So, and another comment made by Captain Lee Moick, head of the Airline Pilots Association, said those who do want to fly commercial jets are increasingly being wooed by foreign airlines. So, host, what are your thoughts on this?
Who wants to start out? George?
Well,
Neil,
you know, it's...
Jim here, is that a time-wise for an ATR?
Yeah, 1500 for an ATP. Jim,
yeah.
Just a minute. Let's see. George, your thoughts about that.
Well, you know, if we all go back when we first started flying for Eastern, the chances are very high that we had probably more than 1,500 hours of total flight time when we got hired on. And then, although we had seat swapping at Eastern, I believe that stopped around 1968. And so your first position was as a flight engineer in a cockpit, or second officer, as they called them at Eastern. And so you got to watch what went on for a year or two until you upgraded to first officer. Today, a pilot, there's no more flight engineer positions. So a pilot goes directly into the right-hand seat. So unless he's flown some type of jets before, the transition is, even with 1,500 hours, it might sound like a lot. But, for example, the Colgan air crash, up in Buffalo a couple of years ago, the captain and airhead, I believe it was 3,200 hours. And, you know, he's still, it's even with 1,500 hours, it's still pretty much on the light side as far as experience in jet aircraft go.
Any comments, Steve? Jim?
Yeah, I agree with that.
Let's go with Steve first, and Jim, you follow.
Okay.
I agree with that, and also you could even refine that further to what kind of flying did that 1,500 hours entail? Was it from you fair weather guys in South Florida to flying up in the mountains here in North Carolina? So I'll take a mountain pilot any day over a South Florida pilot.
Jim?
Yeah, I remember Neil back. Well, it's during the Vietnam conflict was going on. Eastern was hiring co-pilots, 250 hours, commercial and instrument, and that was it.
That's right.
I had a co-pilot once that only had 300 hours.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. They hired a lot of friends of mine that had very minimum. As a matter of fact, I had a flight school in Atlanta, and we were turning out pilots back in the 70s. That had minimum time and were hired with Eastern, like you say, 250 hours. And by golly, there was a need for pilots then, and there's going to be a tremendous need for pilots in the future, because I read in the Embry-Riddle letter that they send to alumni that in the next 20 years, there will be a need of 460,000 flight deck crew members, pilots in the air. In the next 20 years, 460,000. Divide that by 20, and it's 23,000 a year. Maintenance technicians, they're requiring 640,000 new people in the next 20 years. So that's over 30,000 new jobs that will be available. And that's a tremendous number of people. So the schools are going to be very, very busy, but I think they're going to have to relax on the rules if they want people in the cockpit of air carriers of this 1,500 hours. It's going to be very costly for those folks to gain the time. Don't know where they're coming from. I think someone just mentioned that, Steve, maybe you did, or George, that military folks are not leaving the service. Well, probably not many jobs available as pilots in the military because of the drone activity that is now happening. And folks sitting in little cubicles doing combat across on the other side of the world. It's absolutely amazing. It's really going to be a critical shortage, I believe.
Neil, if I could share one interesting story about minimum time, and I think somebody mentioned the 60s, was it, where we were hiring pilots with 250 hours minimum time?
Mm-hmm.
I was flying in Washington at this time, and I was flying the Electra. And I get a new pilot, and I had just fresh out of school, and we had a complicated route. But the first leg was a very easy one, so I said, why don't you take the first leg and I'll take the second one. So he takes the first leg, and he absolutely just greases that Electra on, and he flew it like he was born to it. And I asked him when we got to the gate, I said, well, how much time have you got? How much experience? He said, well, counting that landing, I have 35 hours of fixed-wing time.
Oh, my God.
And he absolutely yeah. was the best stick and rudder guy that I had flown with in a long time. And wow. But he had several thousand hours, and he flew Army One for Lyndon Johnson. I wish I could remember his name.
Yeah.
But he's a great pilot. But it's helicopter pilot.
Okay. Jim, you got a comment?
No, the young man that flew right seat for me, it was, I guess the time he was out of school and so forth, he probably had 260, 270, was, just like you all said, was an excellent young man. He watched what he was doing, and I'm afraid he probably beat me on the landings a couple of times.
Yeah, but you're pretty good on rejected takeoffs, Jim Graybill. Jim and I laugh about that because I flew a 757 out west and left, had my break in Portland, Oregon, and turned the airplane over to Jim, and he took off and had a flat tire. And
a flat tire, Neil, 3 out of 4.
Oh God, I'm sorry. I must have made a pretty hard landing there, Jim. Now, let's move on. That's a good discussion about the requirements of in aviation coming up here. It's going to be interesting to see. And by the way, you guys, have you been following how many orders Boeing and Airbus are taking now? It is it's amazing. 600 and some odd deliveries of Boeing within the last year, I think, and they're forecast to go above that. And Airbus, of course, they're running neck and neck. You know, they're the only two actually big commercial builders. They're smaller regional carrier builders, but the big guys are just the two of them that I know of. And so they're going to be really busy. And by the way, all of you saw that they overshot the runway and landed in the ocean. And they have bought 95 Boeing 737s. I guess they ought to increase that to 96 now, because I don't think that was Boeing that. Yeah, was it a Boeing that went into the ocean, or was it a 737?
Yeah, 800.
Okay.
800.
Yeah.
Hey, Neil.
You
all
say where the.
Hey, Chuck, where you been?
I've been listening to all you pilot people. So here's a layman's question. This is a layman's question that put out there. Wonder if you don't fly in the United States, how much authority does the FAA have for the rest of the world?
Well, they have the carriers, the foreign carriers that I know of that come into America is what they have requirements. But as far as the other airlines, on the, you know, if they don't fly into the U.S., then of course they have their own civil governing, aviation governing authority. Anybody want to address that answer?
I mean, are they going to put $1,500 on everybody in the world?
No, they can't do that.
No, they'd have no authority to do that.
No.
So then we get back to how much experience the pilots have, right?
Well,
is that going to depend on the airlines, how they hire their own people?
Yeah. I would think so.
Yeah, the FAA is going to require the issuing of FAA certificates to those people that meet the FAA requirements of 1,500 hours. You know, other airlines may have minimum times, and I don't think they have any authority over other carriers.
Just a question.
Steve, you've got an email question, I believe, from someone, or would you like to...
Yeah, I do. This email, Neil, comes from Libby in San Francisco, and she asks our opinion on the following story. And the story is, last week, a federal discrimination lawsuit was filed against U.S. Airways for allegedly refusing to allow two young black men to sit in first class unless they changed clothes. Now, the two were riding buddy passes, flying for free, showed up in sneakers, blue jeans, and baseball caps to fly in first-class seats. So I think we should all respond to Libby's email about our opinions about this, and one of the questions that I would pose to each of you, if you were the supervisor of the employee who provided these buddy passes, how would you discipline this employee? Or if you were senior management, how would you look at the buddy passes as an employee perk? So whoever would like to start out with this, please go ahead.
Well,
Jim Graybill here, and I think the whoever was the carrier, whoever was issuing that, should reject their pass privileges. That's my opinion, but
George, you got an opinion?
Were the two people who filed the lawsuit, were they U.S. Airways employees?
No, they were not. They were simply riding passes for free.
You mean they were from another airline?
No, as far as I know, that was not mentioned. But the buddy passes are available to all employees now, or most employees of most airlines, and they can designate whoever it is. They don't have to be employees.
Yeah, well, but don't they have to travel with an employee?
No, they don't. But the reason I raise that question is that as a former U.S. Airways employee, I was a pilot for them also. When you got a buddy pass for somebody, it came up with that buddy pass, the dress code, and what it was. So it wasn't like, you go to the gate in your bathing suit expecting to get a first-class seat. That's why I was, whoever provided them with the buddy passes, it's right on there what attire is required for both coach and first class.
That's very true. Yes. And I agree with the...
Go ahead.
And I agree with the penalty that that employee would lose their pass privileges, period.
Well, I mean, I don't know if that would be a good idea, because if I give a buddy pass to somebody and it's written right on there what the dress code is and they don't abide by it, why should the employee be held responsible for it?
Do you think, Steve, race had anything to do with this?
Well, of course, that's what they're alleging in their suit.
Yeah.
But it is absolutely the policy, of longstanding policy, that you can't sit in a first-class seat in sneakers, blue jeans, and a baseball cap.
Yeah, with no shirt. You're saying no shirt. Because
no shirt.
I didn't hear you mention shirt.
I assume they had a shirt.
Yeah, okay.
Well, you guys remember flying out of San Juan or out of the islands, coming back to the States? Gosh, we used to have, first-class passengers. Of course, this was a passenger, not a pass rider. But, sneakers and short shorts and you name it.
Yeah, but not a C3 pass rider.
That's correct.
Yeah, you were out there in 86 degrees with 100% relative humidity, and you had a suit on, or either a sports coat, long sleeve shirt, and a tie.
Yep.
Yeah.
Policy, and my golly, you conformed with the Eastern policy. And if I were running an airline, that's what I would require.
I agree.
You know, it was
totally
interesting,
agree.
Too, because if you were pass riding and you showed up for a flight, you could always count how many employees there were out there waiting for that same flight just by looking at the people who were well-dressed.
Steve, my kids did that every time I took them on a flight. Every time they pass-rode with me, we would get the C3 passes, and my daughter and my son would sit there and count the number of people, and then they would say, okay, now we'll count the ones in full formal dress attire. And then we'll see what our chances are. But, okay, very interesting discussion. Chuck, you have something that you want to make a comment about, or an email?
No, mine's more of a comment and question. I heard on television a little blurb. Does the TSA ever catch terrorists? And I got to thinking, so I started kind of rummaging around. And according to the TSA website, the new security measures, like a full-body scanner, are just part of its mission to prevent any terrorist or criminal activity. But have TSA scanners ever actually prevented a terrorist attack? The TSA is unable to provide any comprehensive data covering all 9 years of existence and on short notice about have they ever prevented a terrorist attack. They do publicize incidents. That would be like agents finding artful, concealed, prohibited items. And they are some of them, it's very dangerous. 11 firearms were found in past November, and they also had some people there that actually had flares. And anybody in the right mind knows that you don't have flares or meat cleavers in your baggage. But citing the national security concern, the TSA will at no point do any specified cases in which a screener would be a terrorist at a checkpoint. So they really have not come down with an actual terrorist that has a plan, they found out, or has any reason to do any harm to the aircraft. They do find what they call random nut jobs. That's guys that try to sneak this stuff through. And but there's no terrorist with a thought-out plan. They have what they have is called a behavioral detection program, also known as SPOT, S-P-O-T, screening of passengers by observational techniques. This sounds really good. It has been one of TSA's most roundly criticized initiatives. Past May, the Government Accounting Office released a report noting that SPOT annual cost is more than $200 million, and that's as of March
of
2010, so it's gone up since then. And they had more than 3,000 behavioral detection officers that were employed at 161 airports, but not had apprehended a single terrorist. They've got drug dealers, they've got illegal aliens, and they get arrested, and so that's part of their program when they said that they prevent not only terrorist attack but criminal activities. And they said once more, the GAO noted that at least 16 individuals later accused of involvement in terrorist plots flew 23 different times through U.S. ports since 2004, but the TSA behavioral detection officer didn't sniff any of them out. And a later incident, John Tyler, who was asked to go through the screening, refused to go through an airport security pat-down with a now-famous phrase, "If you touch my junk, I'll have you arrested." Texas Congressman Ron Paul introduced the American Travelers Dignity Act to establish that airport security screeners are not immune from any U.S. laws. Several groups have jumped on that bandwagon, and they're coming for November the 24th, which is Thanksgiving, obviously. It's going to be a national op-out day against invasive body scanners. Has anybody got any questions or comments about the TSA?
Well, I've got one little one here. Jim Graybill in Lexington, the museum is here in Lexington. It's probably, I don't know, 300-400 yards from the terminal building. And on the second floor of the museum, we've got a balcony that it's just beautiful to go out there and sit and watch all of what's going on around at the airport. And you have to have one of the museum passes around your neck before you can go out there. They came out the other day and said, we can't do that anymore. It's a shooting platform.
A shooting platform?
Yes, sir.
So how do you get a rifle out on the shooting range?
And we have to have our IDs around our neck when we go out there. So,
yeah.
It doesn't make much sense.
I remember a lot of airports where we used to fly in the old days. Pittsburgh just comes to mind that people would go up on the top of the observation deck out in the open. Of course, they were right there with the airplanes boarding and deplaning, and it was right there in the open. Of course, those days are gone. But
Washington D.C. was
that's
same
right.
Way.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah,
they sure did.
Exactly.
Yeah, they had one. And so Chuck, what you're saying is that the TSA have found no terrorists. Is that correct? Is that the point?
Yeah, that's the point. They have found they have not established any terrorist act with a plan that was they were going to initiate or anything else. They've, like they said, they had the nutcases out there that they had already said. But nothing has been, not a single terrorist in the time that we've spent. And this is $200 million a year, and that's in 210 money. So you can imagine how much you're going to spend today because they've increased them. And so what one of the things that these that's been brought up is how much more security are we getting for money than we didn't get before they came on the scene when we hired private security people.
Oh.
Remember the private security people?
That's an excellent point.
Fired?
About the fact that one of the guests. I'm sorry, say again. I was off air.
I would like to know, for our $200 million a year, how much safer is the flying public than when they fired all the civilian guards that we had out there before the TSA was formed? They're not getting any better. We're not getting any more bangs for our buck. And the bucks are going up really high.
Do we still have air marshals in the air that fly on the airplanes?
Yes, you have air marshals.
Have any of y'all ever gone through the security and for whatever reason they ask you if you're a pilot? Boy, you
nope.
Catch it here.
I have not.
George, you've done a book on recently. George Chen, folks, is the author of a great book, and I recommend everyone read it. I'm recommending all my friends. As a matter of fact, I'm sending the book. George, I'm very sorry I didn't buy it for my son, but I want to send him a copy of it. But a fabulous book, Flying Too Close to the Sun. And by the way, I posted all of the comments that are made in reviewing your book, and they're all 5-star comments. And you did a remarkable job in writing that book. It's such an entertaining book.
Thank you.
I hope it's made into a movie so we can all see it.
Well, I hope so too, to be honest with you. I mean, that would be great. I don't know. I haven't heard any definitive word on it yet, but as soon as I do, I will definitely let you know.
Well, the security around the airport in that novel that you wrote, that fictional novel, aviation book, a mystery. I don't know whether there was a break in that, but it probably was. The security of these airports nowadays, it seems like anyone can really get onto the property.
Well,
what do you think?
At Kennedy last year, there was someone who was either, I don't remember if he was either duck hunting or fishing, and he had something happened to his boat, so he ran it up on the land at Kennedy and crossed over two runways and went into one of the terminals there.
Oh, my goodness.
So now they're probably spending millions of dollars to put up fences all along the runways to prevent that from happening.
Yeah.
Chuck, to answer your question, I think we are 0 degrees safer with TSA than we were before with the private. As a matter of fact, I think we ought to go back to that.
I agree.
Well, according to some of the articles I read, the average public is really fed up with this because there was an incident with a young man, a young boy, and that really got out of hand. And it was actually on the 6 o'clock news about a pat-down of a child. So they're now the TSA is looking into this incident, and I think they're rethinking about who's going to get pat down for what reason. I mean, a seven-year-old child to be pat down physically, and from what I got from the article and what was on television, it was done very, very sloppy. And so their parents obviously was very excited about this whole thing, about this, their child being touched.
Margaret, I think you've got another email here or a comment.
Well, actually, I just wanted to very quickly talk about a very interesting story recently from the Internet News. And so here was the quote. You can use this system to modify approximately everything related to the navigation of a plane, and that includes a lot of nasty things, unquote. Now, that was said by Hugo Tesso. He was a security researcher from the German consultancy agency Enron. And so his claim is he can hijack an airplane's navigation system by simply using a smartphone app, a radio transmitter, and some flight software. And so anyway, he said that once he was into the airline's computer, he could manipulate it. But, of course, you know, there's counter, you know, remarks about that, and they're saying that, well, many planes no longer have the old analog. And I guess the thing was they were saying that he actually did that with a flight simulator rather than an actual plane.
Yeah, yeah, I think that was the case. And the FAA
mm-hmm.
Came out to counter that by
they
the
did.
Fact that it was kind of mm-hmm. a simulator type of commandeering an airplane. You guys read that story?
I have.
I haven't seen it.
Yeah, hack in the box is what it's referred to. Hack in the box. Wouldn't it be something that if someone could, on an airplane with a computer, because now they're available in the air, hijack the airplane they're in and go into their navigational system? Do you think it can be done, guys?
Electronically, I assume it can, but that's what we put pilots up in the front end for, isn't it?
Well,
yeah,
if you've got people flying drones and they're halfway around the world, I guess you think it's a possibility. They even made a movie about this one time.
Yeah. But, Jim, I think you're right. You can punch the autopilot off and manually control the airplane.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. You know, there was an airline that I read part of this in, I think it was India, if I'm not mistaken. But they brought the crew back for training because they had turned the autopilot off and was hand flying it.
What do you pay them for?
Well, that goes to the first part of our discussion tonight about the 1,500-hour pilots.
Yeah.
Because I think that's predicated upon them not being able to hand fly it. Just kidding.
Well, Captain Eddie said years ago, what the hell do you need an autopilot for when Sperry
I remember that one, yeah.
You guys are getting paid too much anyhow.
Well, you remember the story about the, and it was a story, about the captain who had a heart attack and the first officer phoned into the office and told all about it, and they said, oh, okay, we'll give you clearance, and you land on runway so-and-so, and he comes back and he says, I had a hard-nosed captain. He did all the flying. I don't know how to land the plane.
yeah, well, interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Very good. But, you know, I think one day they're going to have to think about that because these hackers are getting into everybody's business.
Oh, yeah. But I think with the electronics that you have today and in the future, things like that will be built into the computer systems and everything of the airplanes where you can't do it. I mean, obviously, if somebody thought this up, somebody with in the engineering department at Boeing or Airbus or something have thought of the same thing. So there's got to be some checks and balances in the electronic equipment that stops this.
Well, we can all fly our own drones, of course. that's available in kits. And we can put cameras on them. I guess we can put kind of little miniature guided missiles on them. I don't know, but it's getting scary.
I'm surprised, Jim, hasn't come up, Neil, because I do a lot of RC flying here in Lexington.
Okay.
And, well, we can put just about anything on one of these little RC airplanes that you want. I'm really surprised that the FAA hadn't gotten into this, but I guess I should keep quiet before they think of it themselves.
Television a while back, they caught this guy. He had one of these little drone things that has like four propellers underneath it, and he put a camera on it, and he flew it over a nudist colony.
No, that's where it should be used.
There you go.
Yeah.
Hey. We're a clean show.
Where's Luann hiding?
Where's Luann?
Actually, Luann is back in Kentucky right now.
Oh.
And she was so upset over the University of Louisville winning and UK not doing it. So she'll recover one of these days. So she'll be back before you know it.
I just you might tell her I've got my Jeep fixed so that, you know, I can go along the side of the hill down there.
Well, she'll be happy to know that. Absolutely. Love those lopsided Jeeps.
Yeah.
It must be a Kentucky
It's
joke.
An inside joke, yeah.
Oh, my golly. Well, I hear the music in the background, folks. And telling us that we're getting very close to the end of our show tonight. We hope you have enjoyed this open mic presentation as much as we've had in being with you tonight. And to our hundreds of listeners around the world, we hope you can be with us again next Monday at the same time and the same place on your internet dial. And our sign-off bumper music tells me that we're about out of time for this week's show. And as you know, all of our radio shows go by episode numbers. We're about to put our 112th broadcast into the radio archives. Remember, you can listen again to this episode or any of the 111 during the past 2 years we've been broadcasting. Tell your friends about the show. More importantly, get involved with the rest of your hosts by participating in these broadcasts. You're welcome to participate live and on the air each Monday. We're proud of the fact that this show is the only airline company radio show of its kind. It's part of the way we are keeping the memory of Eastern alive. We are the radio voice of Eastern Airlines. Well, that's all for tonight, folks, and from all of your hosts we say,
good night.
Good night.
Good night. Good night, everybody.
Good night. Enjoy it.
Good night, sleep tight, and pleasant dreams.
to be. Get rather from here out. There you go. Jim's still on the line. He won't give up. He's listening to that song.